So it's 10 a.m. on Tuesday, July 9th, 2019. I'm hereby calling the meeting of the Board of Supervisors of Stewart County to order. And please feel free to join us if you want in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, thank you. The next thing we have is adoption of agenda, and I'll just make a note here that under the consent agenda, we'll be pulling item 6 pending further review. Is there anything, any other changes on the agenda?
I just have a question maybe for legal counsel. Please. Walked out. Oh, I'm sorry. After the closed session, do we need to state that we're going, that we will go back into open session?
We'll return to open session.
Okay. So it just said adjournment on there, and so I just wasn't quite clear.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions about the agenda?
No.
Okay. I'll consider it adopted then. Public comment number one. Is there any member of the public that would like to make a comment about a topic on today's agenda? If so, would you please move to the microphone? Seeing no one move to the microphone, I'll close public comment session. Next, we have agency reports, Irony Ball annual report, Cynthia Steidel?
Steidel,
Bishop, I'm sorry. Cynthia, welcome.
Good morning.
Hello, good morning. I'm Cynthia Steidel Bishop. I'm the CEO at Irony Ball, Community Mental Health Services. You have in front of you, I provided information, more detailed information about Irony Ball, and I'll just kind of give an overview about what we're up to now. We have been providing services in Story County since 2012. For a while, and we started out as an outpatient clinic, and now we're providing 7 additional services in Story County. And so we feel good about that because we are a designated community mental health center. And what we do as a community mental health center is to be a safety net organization that provides services, the whole continuum of services for folks. We serve mostly adults, but we provide that whole continuum of services for adults with mental health issues. So the programs that we've added, we serve, obviously we work at the clinic, so we do therapy and we have a med provider there, as well as we have care coordination, which coordinates services and gets funding for clients. We have community-based services. We have our mobile crisis team and our ACT team. So those are all the services that we have. I thought I would focus, you probably know about a lot of those services, so I wanted to talk about 3 specific services. And one is our RESTORE program, which I think is a really neat, awesome service. It's an evidence-based service that it treats folks who have first-episode psychosis. And so it's an evidence-based service that we actually, Irony Ball was one of the pilot projects when nationally they were doing pilot projects to see if this would actually become an evidence-based service. And the way to talk about it was, I'll just tell you a brief story about a call that I received last week from someone in the community, and they said they had a relative who was living out in California, gone to school out there, and the roommate called and said, "You got to come get your kid. Something's up." And so they brought him here, and he was having his first episode of psychosis. And what we do then is that it's an all-inclusive service. It's a wraparound service, so we have a med provider that works specifically with clients in that RESTORE model. We have a therapist who works with the family and provides support to the family. We have therapists that work individually with the client. So it's this, and we have community-based services. So it's kind of like our ACT team, except it's when a client is first diagnosed. So that way they can receive services. So their baseline stays higher and their recovery is going to be much better. The outcomes are much better when the client is first diagnosed, and that way they can receive services, a lot of services, right away. So we provide that service up here, and we provide it in Des Moines as well as up in Story County. So it's really an awesome service. Another service that's fairly new to Story County is our ACT team. Serves community treatment team. We've got 18 clients in that program. It's kind of similar to Restore, except it's kind of on the other end, where that's an evidence-based model, but it has, they have to meet a lot more requirements. It's a Medicaid-funded service where they have to essentially fail, what they call it, or all the other services. So the other services don't work. So then they are, again, it's a whole wraparound service where they get all of their services from one team, and it's a 24/7 program. And then the last service is mobile crisis, which is not new this year, but it's been around for about 2 years. I think we're going on 2 years. And I just wanted to report that 72% of the people that we see in Story County were diverted from the hospital. So we thought that was a pretty awesome number. Law enforcement here in Story County has been wonderful to work with. We get a lot of referrals from law enforcement. So we go out in teams of two, and law enforcement generally calls. But we are getting more self-referrals, which is great because people then are starting to call us instead of calling law enforcement. So that's been wonderful. So mobile crisis continues to grow in throughout the whole region, but Story County is one of our biggest counties that yet use that service. So we're excited about that. Irely Ball, when we look about our strengths that we see, our strengths at Irely Ball is that we do provide that full continuum of services, and we want to continue to add more services up in this region. We love working with the CICS region. They are fantastic professional, great people who collaborate with providers. We love CICS. And we continue to want to expand more services up in Story County. We also, Irely Ball, we've always kind of filled gaps. When we see a gap in service, we want to fill that gap. So that's one thing that we want to continue to do up in Story County. We'd love to provide a senior outreach service up here for seniors to, we can provide therapy for them in their homes. Hard to get funding for that service. It's parity does not apply with the senior population. It's really unfortunate, but we're going to keep trying. We affiliated with Unity Point about a year and a half ago, and that's been really positive for us. It's allowed Irely Ball to have access to resources that we never had before. Also this last year, we've combined our community-based services with our clinic, and that's been really great for collaboration. The challenges that we have, not just in Story County, but throughout in mental health, is recruitment. We have, you know, it's on the positive side, a lot of people are working. You know, with 2.5% unemployment, we're all, like, wanting those same people. So we really struggle with recruitment, even though Story County has continued, in the CICS region, has continued to provide incentives to recruit people. We still struggle. We struggle with our rates. We, you know, as a community mental health center, we really want to provide services out in the community. We really believe services in the community are so important to the success and recovery of the clients that we serve, but the rates are not good for the community-based services, and that's a real challenge, and we can want to continue to advocate for higher rates for those community-based services. Do you have any questions?
I'll let you go first.
Thanks for being here today.
Yeah.
And stuff. I just want to actually make more of a comment and stuff. The mobile crisis I have seen from my prior roles is definitely a positive impact, and hearing from local law enforcement, particularly Julie Saxton with the Ames Police Department, who said her caseload has decreased dramatically because of mobile crisis. My one question is, do you still have just one team in this particular area, or do you have more teams up?
For mobile crisis?
Right.
The way that it works is we have three teams We have a northern team, a central team, and a southern team.
Right, right, right.
And you're wondering how many teams respond here?
Yeah, well, I know because of the volume of calls and with Ames being a highly populated area, which where there's probably the larger concentration of your calls, there had been conversation of needing maybe two teams in this particular area. And I just didn't know if your numbers are showing that that's still a need or if it's being managed how it currently.
Well, right now, based on our response time, it's about 38 minutes, I saw, was our response time. So I think that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And until, you know, if our response time was getting past that hour, then we would definitely want to add more teams. So if we see that, we will definitely add, we want to be,
sure,
be there to meet the need. So but this response time shows that we are getting to the calls within that hour time.
So, okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm interested in kind of the turnaround time, the wait time for clients then to get into the actual center, to whether it be for med checks or anything like that. So more in your role as community health, our community mental health provider. How is it going as far as appointments and turnaround time?
Well, that's a struggle, for sure. That is a struggle. Just like I said before, getting recruiting is hard. So we have a med provider, it's a telehealth provider that we have up here, and I can't tell you what our wait time is for that. I don't think that's a huge issue, but what we've done is we've brought up therapists. We just hired a new therapist that has started up in the clinic. And then we have another therapist. We've got three therapists. I think you have the number of staff that we have up in the clinic. That's on there. But I can't tell you the wait times, but that's an issue. And it's an issue that we certainly have. I met with Heather Thomas, who is our outpatient clinic director, this morning, and we talked about that. Just broadly, it's tough because we have open access where people can just come in and get services. But the problem is then is that follow-up service is taking about a month to get that follow-up appointment. So that's where we really struggle. We want to get people in, but it's the follow-up.
You may be able to get them in, isn't it, on Thursday? You have time blocked.
For open access.
For open access. And you can get them in, but it's getting them. Okay.
The follow-up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're averaging about a month for the follow-up.
A month for the follow-up.
Yep.
If you'd let me ask a follow-up question.
Sure.
So roughly, what do you think the gap is percentage-wise for pay between what you're able to pay and be sustainable and what you think you need to pay to be able to really make sure that you had the staff you need all the time? Are we talking 20%?
Here's what's 40? Tricky about that,
okay.
And surprising, actually. Again, the CICS region has been wonderful to work with, and that's an issue, right? Paying for staff. And so what they did at LISWs, licensed independent social workers, are the hardest to recruit. I would, as well as med providers,
okay,
are the hardest to recruit. So what they did was they provided incentive dollars to recruit LISWs. And it's a really nice incentive. And you still can't recruit.
Okay.
So that's been a real struggle. We are really surprised at that, because LISWs are the only ones that can serve the Medicare population. And so I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. We thought that those incentive dollars would really be would be able to bring people in, and we still have struggled with that, both on the med provider side and the LISW side.
So anytime we run into a student who's going after the LSW, would be very nice and very encouraging, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. And also at Ireland Ball, what's kind of sweet for students, we do supervision. So to be an LSW, you need two years of supervision. But what we've struggled with was then we would provide the 2 years of supervision, and then they would go someplace else where they can get their loans paid off. That was always a struggle, too, because it's a good recruiting tool that we provide that supervision. But then we applied to federal money to then provide loan repayment. The person actually has to apply for that, but we are a site where they could get, up in Ames, Ames only, where we could get reimbursement for that. So, I don't know. It's hard.
Thanks for keeping on trying.
We're trying. We're trying.
Nathan, a couple questions.
Yeah.
When did you start doing the Restore program?
Restore, we've been doing that, I believe, for a couple years. Again, we were a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but we only serve, because I asked that question about how many people do we serve up here, because it's such a cool program.
Mm-hmm.
And we had two clients up in Ames,
okay.
And then we now one of those clients wanted to go just to traditional services, so now we just have one. And that's why I wanted to talk about it, because I don't know if people know about it.
Well, I wonder if you didn't have any stats there on it, so that's why I was wondering.
That's okay. It. So, we get a lot of referrals in Des Moines from the hospitals, because that's where they're going to see that first
mm-hmm.
episode. So, gosh, it's a great program with really great outcomes.
Have you talked with Mobile Crisis folks about it?
Yep. Yeah, they know about that program.
They know about it, because that would be... If that's what's diverting, where are you getting the people diverted from the hospital? That would seem to be like the likely place.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to ask about was the assertive community treatment team. And I see you said you have 18.
Mm-hmm.
How many staff are devoted to the ACT team? Do you have a psychiatrist or psychiatrist?
There is a med provider. So currently, there's a med provider, and then there is a nurse. We're hiring a nurse for that program. The nurse we currently use is on staff. The model is supposed to work is you're supposed to have all of these clients or staff within that team,
yeah,
right?
That's why I'm asking.
But if you don't have enough clients to pay, so you have to build up the number of clients before you can continue to add more staff. So ideally, we want to have a full-time RN, which we're working on right now because we are building up 18. It's
mm-hmm.
better than what's been. And we want a full-time employment person and substance abuse person. The med provider spends part-time in there, which we hope that will beginning mm-hmm. soon. And a therapist. So we're not there yet.
Okay.
But as we continue to grow that team, we'll be able to add more staff to pay for the team, for the staff people.
Once you have the full team in place, how many people do you think it can provide services to? 40, 45, that range?
Yes.
That's what I've
definitely,
seen before.
Definitely. We have two teams in Des Moines, and we've been providing the service for 20 years. I've been doing it for a long time.
Okay.
I did that when I first started. We started mm-hmm. the PAC team, and we can provide about 75 is a full team. Now, with the population, we're not likely to have 75 people, clients, based on the University of Iowa study up in Ames. We're not likely to have 75 clients, but we're hoping for about 40 to 45.
But you're using that University of Iowa model.
Yeah.
Williams model. Okay.
Yep.
Great.
It's a state model now.
I'm a great fan of ACT because they really do keep people out of institutionalization. And
yeah.
But they also struggle when it's a smaller community to set them up. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions?
No, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks
thank
very
you.
Much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll then go on to consideration of minutes. We have minutes from the July 2nd meeting and the July 2nd special meeting.
I would move that we approve both of them as they were presented.
I second that.
Second. Any discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Hayden?
Aye.
Okay. Merkin? Aye. Minutes are approved. Next, consideration of personnel actions as listed on our agenda. Motion?
I would move that we approve them as presented.
I second that.
Okay. I assume there's no discussion. Olson?
Aye.
Hayden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Personnel actions are approved. Then we have claims as submitted.
I move we approve the claims, the consideration of claims as presented.
I second.
Okay. Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Claims are approved. Then the consent agenda with the, we removed item six, so I'd entertain a motion to approve consent agenda left item six.
I move that we approve everything on the consent agenda with the exception of item six.
And I second that motion.
Okay, any discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Edens?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Consent agenda left item six is approved. We have no public hearing items, so we'll move on to additional items. And the first one is discussion and consideration of letter of support and financial contribution to the Ames Miracle Field and Playground. We have Drew Camp here, and we have Lynn Carey, president of Ames Foundation. And they have submitted several documents which are attached to the agenda. And I don't know if you want to say any, make any brief comments, but I understand you're basically mainly here to answer questions.
Certainly. Thank you so much for your consideration today.
Good morning.
We are seeking a contribution of $25,000 to the Miracle Park project, which includes a Miracle ball field and an inclusive playground to be located at Inez Grove Park in Ames, but will serve people of the entire community and beyond. This project is something that we've worked hard on for several years, and we're very near the end of our fundraising phase. We have an opportunity to apply for a community and attraction tourism grant from the state, and it does require county participation. So that's why we're here today.
I just have one question for you. In the application that came from us, there was language in there about the financial contributions from the city. I think it was from the city and the county that you couldn't count. Is that correct?
That's correct. We met with the staff that directs the CAT grants, and they let us know that contributions that have been already made for the project cannot count, and it does have to be for capital.
Okay, okay. So you'd be seeking any new grants is what you can use
right.
These to
exactly.
For the match or whatever for that. Okay, okay. That provides some clarification to me. I would make a motion to approve the $25,000 to go towards the Miracle League. It is a, I think it's a great program. It would be for public use. You're looking at predominantly the most disadvantaged individuals that would be utilizing the field. And if you haven't been to a Miracle League tournament, certainly suggest folks to participate or to see that, because it really is something special and incredible that goes on.
I'll go ahead. Second, but I'd really like to have discussion. I hadn't had all my questions answered.
Sure. But a motion and a second. Let's have a discussion then and any further questions.
Okay, thanks. So you've cut it back a bit now, and you explained the various funding levels. And so as I looked at that and I saw that you'd taken out some items that I'm wondering about being able to put back in if you get the entire $200,000. So can you run for me right now exactly what the budget, the total amount is versus where you started, what you're shooting for?
The current budget is $2,027,000 with the Ames Foundation providing an additional $50,000 of contingency funding. We fully intend, as the Ames Foundation, to continue fundraising to add back in some of the items that were set aside. They're set aside as ad alternates. Actually, our contract with the contractor includes all of those items, and we would just deduct them as we go. So our intention is to add those items back in. First and foremost, the item that we would like to add back in is the lighting for the ball field. It's not a necessary component. Not every Miracle Field has that. We think that it would add a component that would be really exciting for the participants. It also would mean that the Parks and Rec in Ames could use that field for other purposes, too, which is a good thing. So our intent is to continue fundraising up to the level that's just below $2.2 million. That's our intent.
Okay. So if you got the entire grant of $200,000, are you saying that you're at $1.8 million in other fundraising?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So then I'm going to express a concern. This concern I have expressed before on other grants related to the Iowa Economic Development, whatever. Thank you. Okay. I get lost with the change of the word, the last word. But and it has to do with the fact that the authority or whatever board it has that's approving the various grants has come back and told government entities in the past that, no, we don't think you've put enough money in.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that happened to Johnson County with the Coralville project. So I did call and spoke to Maisie, one of the two people who are in charge of this Enhanced Iowa program, and she did say yes, in fact, her board could do that, not would, but could, if they felt that there wasn't enough participation from the government entities, but they'd try to work together. So my concern, and I'm expressing this as a concern here, is that if they come back and take a look at what the original plans for the field were and what it could be versus what you're asking for, because there's about still a $200,000 gap if you make the 2.1 to 2.2, right? And they would say, no, we think that, like, the county should kick in more money. And at that particular point, you know, it puts us in a very awkward position. We approve a dollar amount we believe that we can afford. We know what's coming down the pike, or we have a pretty good estimation of what's coming down the pike. And then all of a sudden, what if we get hit? And the Johnson County one really sticks out in my mind because if I seem to remember correctly, that the required that they had to kick in was 1.5 times more than what the 2.5. It ended up from 100,000 to like 250,000. I mean, it was a substantial. All right. So I just want to express my concerns and make it clear that there's no guarantee that if the IEBA comes back and wants more money from us, that we'd be willing to give it. And that places us then in an awkward position of a lot of community push on us when we know what we need monetarily wise. Okay? So that's my expression.
Okay. And that's a very legitimate concern. Hopefully I can assuage those fears a little bit. We did have a very productive meeting with staff that manages the CAT grant. We laid out our plans. We were very frank with where we are with fundraising, and basically we're given the green light. The expectation would be not be to come back to the county from that conversation, and that wasn't a binding conversation by any means, but very enthusiastic about our plans. And we also, the Ames Foundation is continuing to seek funding from other sources, and we do have a couple of announcements coming up very soon that would also help assuage your fears in that regard. I have the utmost confidence that this $200,000 grant from the CAT, if received, would allow us to add back in amenities rather than just get to the base amount.
And one thing I will add too is the fact that we can't make any guarantees, obviously, but we do have a sample. And a sample is Dubuque, and they recently received some funding for a similar project, but they received $500,000 in funding. Our project, we're asking for $200,000, so simple math would make us think that seems like a logical number. Obviously, we can make no guarantees, but just comparing apples to apples in that regard, it's interesting.
All right, thank you. And a couple other questions, or maybe just clarifications or reassurances. I understand you're asking a one-time commitment for the county. There's no ongoing operating expenses that you will be requesting of the county. It's the one-time commitment for the purpose of matching the CAT grant.
That is the case. The actual park will be turned over. The the Miracle mm-hmm. Field and Inclusive Playground will be turned over to the City of Ames Park and Recreation Department, and they will maintain.
And I also understand that you have identified some money that the city will be participating in terms of some park upgrades, that can be used as match as well. That will be the city's contribution?
Yes, for the CAT grant, the project is actually a larger project that includes other inclusive aspects of Inez Grove Park. Mm-hmm. So the city will be providing accessible restrooms, drinking fountain, wider sidewalks, things like that.
And have they assured you that that will be considered as a contribution then? Or it's,
yes.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I had noticed was that there are Miracle Fields in Ankeny and Des Moines, which are fairly close. The letter of support, which we'll also have to deal with, it's on the agenda. We did talk about that this would attract people from other counties as well, and I did happen to be talking to Lynn, and I asked her, I said, but there's two in Polk County, but what it does do is allow teams, to have teams to come here, mm-hmm. and that's why it would attract and kind of be part of a network. So that was something that I thought was worth thinking about too as well. So those are all my questions, I believe. Any other questions?
No, except for I just apologize for making my motion before you asked your question. So
I think that's okay.
It's okay.
We can still ask questions.
Not a problem.
Some would actually say you should have a motion before you discuss it all.
So
we kind of do questions, motions, further discussion. But we get it. It works. So if there's no further discussion, is there, we'll vote then. Let's see. Edmund?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Passes. We also did have a letter of support on the agenda. And we need to, since it's on the agenda separately, we need a motion for the letter of support, which you need for the grant, correct?
Correct.
Is there a motion to approve the letter of support that was drafted?
I'll move that we approve the letter of support as it appears.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. Any discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Hinton?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Letter of support also approved. Thank you very much for coming, and thank you for the thorough job you did in sending us the information. That really helps.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
The entire county will thank you.
Have a good rest of the day.
Okay, next we have our engineer, Darren Moon, for consideration of a resolution 20-06, speed limit on 19th Street. Darren?
Good morning.
Hey, have we figured that out yet? Why?
It's kind of a pretty fuchsia color.
Mm-hmm. That, Jerry, was it yours that it did it last time on? Oh, okay. All right. So at least
I think it was Amelia.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, maybe that's something that we could check in with IT later.
They came up last time, though, didn't they, on it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alyssa just put it on. She'll check.
Something with the internal something.
It's only technology. It's not perfect.
Makes me feel better.
Okay, there it goes. Blue water, that looks good.
This is a resolution for a speed limit request. This is the southeast portion of Nevada. Here's the county house out here, 19th Street.
request is for this portion right here. The city limits go down the rate here at this location, and then the road is 50-50, half city, half county, up to about right here. What spurred this probably is the new four-way stop here. The city looked at the speed limits coming into that. They wanted to lower it over the overpass, and there's going to be a stop condition here now that they got in place. Typically, speed limits when it comes to secondary roads, we do a speed study and we do a 95th percentile study on it. We set it that way. When it comes to areas abutting cities and where it's half and half, I typically just kind of go with the city and let them set what they want. We'll typically go along with it because it's really entrance into the city. The city has already passed their ordinance resolution, whatever they passed, to make this 35, so we would just be matching what they've already done. Initially, I expressed some concern with the city that I thought it went a little bit too far. It goes down to here, that is the city on the climb on the west half. But they assured me they felt this parcel was going to be developed in the near future. They just wanted to get it all taken care of now. The traffic needs to start to slow down a little sooner. I think the hospital is expanding or something. But that's the rationale why it goes so far.
Otherwise, if there are any concerns, I would recommend we match the city's 35 miles. Questions?
I just have one question. So, is it right now? Is it just at 50 or 45 or kind of just wide open?
Yeah, the state code is 55 during the day, 50 at night for secondary roads that aren't
close. Gotcha, gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Loris, any questions?
None for me.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion to approve setting the speed limit to 35 miles an hour.
I would second that.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Motion carried. Thank you, Darren. And are you up for the next item as well?
Yep. A few more.
A few more. Okay. We'll keep talking. Road use maintenance agreement.
This is for the update to the wind farm in northeast Story County. There's 100 wind turbines they're going to redo the blades on. He's got three blades, that 300 blades are bringing in. We've been working on this agreement for a few months now for the road maintenance agreement. The good part is this is the same company and the contract we worked with last time in 2008 when the bridge went in. We really didn't have any issues. We had road issues, but they were very quick and good at responding to those issues, so I don't have a lot of concerns about the actual working with them on it. Next area is the company with the wind turbines and Blattner will be the contractor. What this agreement does essentially states we've got to do a road inventory before anything starts, a video inventory. It also turns some of the maintenance over to the contractor during construction. We'll do our regular maintenance out there, but if they're construction causing additional needs, they will assist in maintaining our roads and hauling rock out there for the roads. It requires them to put down dust control in front of the houses and intersections, so we'll definitely be seeing more traffic in the area. And it requires a $750,000 bond to be put up front for road damages. How I came to that number is that's kind of what the first two phases added up to be for actual road damages. I don't think we'll be anywhere near that this time because about 500,000 of that was B-29. They really tore it up. And since then, we have improved that road overlaid. I don't see that happening again. And the majority of the damage they had in the first stage was due to all the rock hauling. It was nonstop rock trucks that went out there. And it was in the spring thaw in terrible condition. So that's what did the road damage. They'll be doing this in the summer, fall, and roads will be more firmed up. But this year, we're a little bit this way. So it could be still some soft spots, but I don't think we're going to be able to damage them. So I'm comfortable with the $750,000. And that is, for the most part, we do have a meeting with them this afternoon to start the discussion. We're going to have to look at them on building out a bunch of radiators because the pulling loads are really long, so they have to build out the turn radiators on a lot of corners and additional driveways, stuff like that. So we'll start that process this afternoon.
recommend approval of the road maintenance agreement.
Board, are there any questions?
None. It appears to take care of everything that was learned from last time, so I'm comfortable with it.
I just have one question. Do you know kind of the length of time that you're going to have that increased weight with the roads as they're repairing or upgrading the blades?
The additional trucks
and stuff that will be going through on the roads there?
Oh, the actual, I thought you meant blades and
time. Oh, yeah, no.
Okay. Loading, last time they had heavier loads, actually, the blades aren't really the heavy part. So they are doing some internal component changes to the main unit, but they're not bringing in the whole unit, but that was a heavier load last time. All these loads are actually under legal loads.
Gotcha, okay.
But we still have to give oversight to the next couple of months. And they will be able to take Highway 65 this time up through Colo. There's a height restriction there that these will fit through there. Last time they all had to go up into Morrisford Hardin County and come back on Highway 65. It's a little easier route. And they won't be coming across anything.
So when will they start and when will they be done by?
Well, they're already kind of behind the original schedule, so I'm not sure. We were supposed to originally have the video inventory done by May 31st, but the agreement hasn't approved it, so they put the video by July 31st. They want to have the inventory done. Like I said, we'll meet really for the first time in 7 years. I hope they'll get a better time. I think they want to be going.
Be done by harvest?
That's a lot of work. The trains are so large. That's the main issue. As much as possible, you don't want to carry them down. It takes a lot of time to carry the trains down. But part of the agreement is we'll allow them to take these trains over our roads. They have to build up a pad of sand, travel over, to tear it down. That'll speed up the process. But, I really don't know how long it's going to take.
Okay. Any other questions? Not. I'll entertain a motion for the maintenance agreement.
I'll make the motion to approve the maintenance agreement, the Story Wind Road use maintenance agreement.
I second.
Discussion? Not. Hedlund?
Aye.
Olson? Aye.
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Pardon me.
That's okay.
It's harder for you.
LLL. It all goes in a row.
Okay. Next, Darren, you're still up. Windstream utility permit. What do we have here?
Okay, this is a new item for us. Typically, utility permits, I approve those and send them to the commission. This one is a new thing coming up that I thought the board needed some input on. What this is a cell tower, but it's more for wireless internet, more than cell service. The height of the pole is what's so different. It's a 100-foot tall pole. It's not that wide of a pole. It's only about 2 foot diameter at the bottom, and it gets down closer to a foot diameter at the top. It's just the height that's a new thing for us. I'll probably bring Jerry up at some point, too. There is a county ordinance that deals with towers, but this is within the right-of-way, so we're kind of stuck in the middle. A lot of counties are getting hit with this now. It's a new thing coming on. I talked with a handful of counties. Lee County, Union County, Woodbury, Harrison, and even Boone County, Taylor County have all approved these to go on the road right away. Johnson County is in a similar situation to us. They're currently going through it with the board on the side how they want to move forward. They probably do have a tower ordinance. A lot of counties probably don't have a tower in place. Ethan's been reviewing there's a code section that deals with towers. It's called 8C, Iowa Cell Siting Act. The confusion to it says it's repealed July 1st of 2020, so that was last week. So we're not sure if this is even still in effect, but the application was submitted prior to that date. Let me show you where these are actually located. What's going on here is talking to another county, they were given a little more explanation. That's one of my big issues. They didn't come and explain this to us. I think they feel like they have a code section that says they can do it. They want to do it as well as much as possible. And they didn't force them in the code to say we're not supposed to really question that much. So we're going out there to prove it. But another county told me that what they're shooting for is about a 5-mile spacing between these towers. These are the 5 that they applied for. That way they're supposed to give rural internet service through wireless instead of having more cable all the way to these new towers. So from that perspective in the roads, I do like that aspect. They're not going to be tearing up the road and put in new lines and be able to do it wirelessly. I assume that they're going to supply high-speed internet service to some more rural areas. The other positive to it, let's get a little more specific on the site. Northeast Nevada, T Avenue, locations right here, off the gravel road. There's a wind turbine right next to it that's much taller. I see this one causing a lot of concerns. It's a little close to town. This is Sandhill Trail, and this is one that actually we learned about first. They actually put some sort of environmental notice in the newspaper that Jerry found out about, and the landlords heard about that and said they were concerned about having the tower close to property, and so we may have some property owner concerns about these municipal rights. We want to make you aware of that. This is Sandhill Trail on 250 of the tower. Coming fairly close to the home, but there's quite a hill here, so I'm sure they're putting it right on top of the hill for that location. This is Iowa Center, just off of Gravel Road. They've already got some utility boxes in here, some infrastructure, and so that's why they're placing it there. This is the E63 curve. There is a current tower here. If you go close to that, this tower is much taller than what they'd be putting in. I see a lot of concerns here. I think there's some things in that code section that we can't require them to cohabitate on that existing tower. Something else we have to think about.
Say that again, Jaron.
There's something in the code section that says we couldn't require them to go on the existing towers to correspond to share power.
Oh, okay. Can't require share towers.
And then the last one down by the Colo, or Collins, sorry, Collins, Highway 210 feet into Highway 65. Located right there.
So how close are those to the actual shoulder of the road?
We would require, see, typically I have to allow utilities to use the public right-of-way, but I can require where they go within the public right-of-way. So I would push them all the way out to 33 feet. They're all on gravel, I believe, except the one E53 has a little bit more. But typically we have 33 feet of gravel.
So they're going to be right up against lot lines.
They go right up to the edge of the fence.
I'm going to ask, take me back here a little bit from, because I have some really basic questions here. First of all, this identifies itself as internet technology, but are you saying that it's the same type of technology that's used for cell phones?
I'm not saying that. What I was getting at is the bill was, the title of the bill was Iowa Cell Siting Act. That said cell, but when it gets into the definitions, it gets into all kinds of wireless definition.
Okay, so
right.
So, and that is a bill that was just passed?
This was 2016.
All right, so we're talking about existing legislation then. All right, thank you. So then you referenced the 100 feet. Most telephone wire posts are not that tall, correct?
We're typically 30 to 40 feet. We
okay.
Do have some taller ones along Lincoln Highway down by the school.
All right. And then the neighbors down Sandhill Trail who heard about this and became upset, what can you summarize what their concerns were? Thank you on this.
Yeah, they actually contacted our office. They saw that there was a notification in the local paper, and it actually cited their address as the location for the proposed utility pole or tower, and they were concerned about it. And normally our process is set out such that when we receive requests for new communications equipment, towers, they go through a conditional use permit process.
Okay.
And we start with conceptual review, staff reviews them, goes to Planning and Zoning Commission, and then the Board of Adjustment makes the final decision. But there's a number of things that we look at with our ordinance, like the co-location factor. We ask for coverage maps to show, you know, the current condition, proposed condition. Questions come up about interference with other communication networks. There's a lot of things that we ask with that CUP process that you're probably not going to get with a permit to locate in a right-of-way, which is something to consider, too.
So we've got, on one hand, a situation where if we consider it a utility pole, as we think of as a telephone or electrical wire pole, Darren gets to issue the permit and just say, I can tell you where you're going to put it in the right-of-way, period. Then we've got the other extreme, which is going through an entire conditional use permit process to put up each one of these, correct? And so that is why, Darren, you brought it to us, is what do we as a county want to do with addressing this? Okay, thank you. That's where I need to be.
I feel like I have to allow it, but there's some section in this section of code that says if you have a current tower or
zoning regulation,
you can restrict it. So I feel like I need to approve for roads, utility, a normal permit, but then if Jerry has something that would restrict it, I think if you wanted, you could.
And we do. And it says that a tower needs to be, what, 150% of its height away from...
Yeah, there's setback requirements from residential districts and from right-of-ways,
yeah,
and from property lines.
Because we've held people to that before.
Yeah. And those are more power-type. And this is just a wood pole that we have out there all over. Mm-hmm.
So our rationale for having our tower ordinance and that setback is what, Jerry?
I think it's a more thorough, comprehensive review, and you're looking at all those factors. You know, if there's an issue with the structure itself, if it falls, it's set back adequate space from adjacent property lines or the right-of-way.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at the communication network itself. A lot of times they're constructed such that other carriers can co-locate. Just the number of factors that you're looking at.
What about traffic as a factor? Because that's the one that hit me as I was trying to weigh in my mind what I thought, really, why one approach versus the other. And I kept on thinking about what you're saying, the co-locate or the number of times that if, in fact, this is more of that cellular type of transmission or, you know, the higher degree. The only time people really go out on a utility pole is if the wires are down or there's a real malfunction, whereas cell towers can get more frequent traffic just for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, it's still pretty low, though, usually like a monthly visit, maybe
okay,
once or twice.
Okay, thank you for that.
In most cases, so it's pretty limited.
So, Darren, I think you were saying that you have the obligation to allow them in the right-of-way unless we have an ordinance, and then they should follow our ordinance? Is that have you talked to the county attorney about this? Maybe that's the next question.
Well, and I need to add, too, that we have a provision in Chapter 85, which is right before our definitions, that talk about exceptions to our zoning regulations, and there's
mm-hmm.
exceptions for public utilities. And that's, I think, part of what we've been trying to look at to discover whether or not this company, which is Windstream Communications, is actually considered a public utility. And so far, I don't think we've concluded that they are.
Yeah, I'd like we to have an assistant county attorney here, and I don't know if you've got a chance to look at this.
I'll address the timing we're under here.
Okay.
There's a section in this code that says within 30 days we have to tell them if their application is complete or not. We're probably beyond that point, and I think their application is probably complete. Beyond that, we have 150 days to give them actual response.
And when did we receive the application?
I would say it was about
June 25th. That's when it's dated.
The 25th? That was before that.
That's the date on the application.
Okay, so it's late June. So we've got plenty of time to look into this. If we say their application is complete, which you're saying, you're indicating you think it is, there's 30 days till the end of July you need to tell them if it's complete, then another 150 days to answer it. Okay.
Yeah, make a decision on the application.
And make a decision.
It's important to point out that this Chapter 8C was passed in 2015, and then it's set to sunset on July 1st, 2020. So not a couple weeks ago, but next year.
Right.
Five year sunset provision on that. And this is the code section that a lot of the different jurisdictions, different counties have pointed to as a concern for them in regulating this activity by these cell companies or communications companies. I think reading through 8C.3, it tells us the things we can't do as a county in considering these applications. We can't inquire into their business plans. We can't inquire into lease arrangements. We can't do these certain things. And it says in 2, we can't evaluate based on the potential for co-location. And it says, notwithstanding that provision, we can inquire an explanation regarding the reason for choosing the proposed location and the reason why they did not choose co-location. And they have to show that the coverage, the site selected would result in increased coverage or service functionability. So there's different things we can consider. And I think what you're getting at is in that 150 days, we do need to consider these things. And I'd be leery of telling them that their application is complete without requiring them to provide those different explanations of why they can't, for instance, the one location, go with the existing cell tower. Why they need to be right next to it within a couple hundred yards. Well, how far is it?
500 feet.
Okay, 500 feet.
I was thinking there was a second one where there was close to another cell tower, wasn't
there? So, yeah, AC.3 said we can't require them to do co-location, but we can require them to provide an explanation regarding why they did not choose co-location, and that explanation shall include a sworn statement from an individual who has authority over placing the tower to tell us why they won't co-locate. So I think we want to be leery of just saying, yes, this is a completed application.
Okay.
Because the 30-day time limit, if we don't get back then within 30 days saying, here's the deficiencies in the application, it is deemed complete. And then the clock starts on 150 days.
Okay.
So within this first 30 days, I think we need to tell them whether or not we think it's complete or not. Then again, we have to go back to the ultimate question that Jerry and I are discussing, and that's whether or not they are a public utility and whether or not we can impose any of our own ordinances over this project.
And why requesting the right-of-way rather than on private properties?
I think strategically and logistically, it's easier for them to get that rather than pursuing easement with a private landowner.
Usually with these, height is key, so it's kind of interesting that they're going to locate at a 95-foot or 100-foot elevation when usually, I mean, at minimum, they're just under 200 feet because at 200 or greater than 200, there's a lighting requirement that the FAA requires.
Okay.
And then, so usually the higher the better, and then other carriers are also interested, which, you know, to share that space.
I'm thinking about right-of-ways, the majority of our right-of-ways, which are along roads, which are along areas where the public occasionally will travel or access, okay? So 100-foot pole, 2 feet diameter, falls and just happens to fall on a busy day or if there's a car or, you know, or whatever. And I'm thinking of a safety issue about being in the right of way as opposed to being able, if they access
private land and have to go through that, making negotiating with the property owner, but it can push those away from the public right of way, the public roadways. That's my biggest concern in this. I appreciate everybody sharing everything, and sounds like, yeah, the sunset and all of this are considerations. I get concerned about thinking about a 100-foot pole standing next to the side of the road. Our right-of-ways on roadways are only 30 feet, correct, Darren, from the center line?
That's true, but the vast majority you have power poles in the same location already. That power pole, they came down.
Thank you. I now will feel so much safer as I drive on roads from now. But thank you. That's a good point that maybe there's a point about where it doesn't matter.
What are power poles? How tall are power poles usually?
They typically 30 to 40 feet.
30 to 40 is
the bigger ones, yeah, close to 70.
And I've seen some of the larger ones recently going through. Okay. Well, it's obviously safety. That's why we have the ordinance we have. This is the first time, my thought is this is the first time we've had this request in the county, and it probably does behoove us right now to find out all the information we can and to utilize the time we have. Just from my viewpoint here, it seems like the three of you have all the questions pretty much in mind that we might ask. Unless there's any additional questions, my thought is that we ask Jerry and Darren and Ethan to work on a response to this with all the concerns and the issues that they've expressed. Is there anything?
No, I guess my only concern was as well, I mean, you guys asked a lot of the questions that I had written down and stuff, and so I was starting all the answers, but when you're looking at going into the right-of-way, then are we setting a precedence that then you opens the door to other utilities that would be looking at the same thing. And I certainly would want to have a little bit more information before we make any final determination.
I agree. Precedent came in my mind, too, and especially, once again, with this sunset, with a changing industry. We have a communications company who then are they getting into what has been considered a utility.
Right.
I support that, Lisa, 100%.
This is that why I stopped. Year and a half, 2 years ago, we did have a request come in right over by the Boone County line, which was more like a development, it had a wider base. And I had some safety concerns on that one, but they were going to shield the dirt. Our initial response, I believe, was I said no, and they just went away. So I don't have a lot of questions saying on whether that legal right to do it or not, because they just kind of went away. It did come up once, and that was a much more substantial.
Thank you.
I think it's important to recognize that the legislature gave us this statutory framework in 8C, and so we have a process to follow, and I think it's important to follow the process for everyone. So for all future applicants, they're going to know whether we're going to follow this process, at least until it sunsets in 2020.
Right.
But this is the same process that Darren alluded to, that the different counties he's talked to, the engineers are wrestling with the implications of applying this statute.
I checked the permit and it is June 25th.
So 30 days to respond.
30 days to respond. Are you able to work together and get a response in that time? Can we just call that direction from the board?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay with everybody?
Yes.
Okay. So directed. Thank you very much for being all of that. Next, we have departmental reports. Darren, you're
again.
Still there.
Still here.
Okay.
Well, I'd start out by saying last 5 months or so have been extremely challenging for our department due to the severe winter, followed by some flooding and then soft spring gravel road conditions. Gravel roads have finally started to firm up. Never seen it take this long before. We still have some soft spots in July, which is unheard of, and it'll still just take time to get the road back in shape with a proper crown. It's going to take time. I gave you two a gravel road presentation a few months back. I guess the main point that came out of that was when you hear the public say the gradually getting worse over the years. Last year was the best spring thaw I can ever remember. We had no frost oil in the spring. We went from the best to the worst. So roads aren't getting continually worse. We put as much gravel as we can feasibly afford. And when they say just get 2 inches of rock on the road, they give you the numbers of what that would cost. Typically, we put about a quarter inch thickness of rock on a quarter of the county per year. To put 2 inches across the entire county would be about $12 million. And we have to do that not every year, which is tough because you lose a lot of money. It would be very expensive to do that, but we're used to doing with less than what we probably need, but we get by, but sometimes what Mother Nature wins. Say we experienced some flooding early on. It did reach the level of FEMA funding. We did get some last year for similar flooding events, and we're finally getting that finalized and getting the funding from last year. That's a little over $100,000. We got some FEMA on that. Fixing some of the crossboils. And then beyond crossboils, it was just all the roads are just off. So if we had hauling conditions going on any drop road, the extension form was pretty bad. This was just taken last week. You can see there's new rock on the side, and the mud just keeps popping up in the middle as it continues the line. It's unheard of. There is a letter I'll forward you guys an email that Hamilton County Engineer put together, a 2 or 3 page letter on what they've been dealing with. It's pretty much statewide. We're all dealing with the same thing. It kind of puts it all in itself for that phase of it.
Thank you.
And then just as of last week, we had another flood event. This is 260 and Sandhill Trail, and we're going to sit down here in between water just pouring over the gravel road. Pretty much isolated, thankfully, to this area right here. I just talked to Lisa before this meeting. Please mark it as right this location. She had 5 inches and 8 days, and that fell in a very short time frame. So we were out July 3rd into the 4th fixing these roads. I wanted to touch on the West Spring Gulf across vegetation to grow very quickly. We have been mowing for safety reasons, even though the state law requires us to wait until July 15th to mow. We get it, it's probably you've mowed twice by now because it's growing so fast. We are allowed to mow for safety reasons. So. Rock hauling, this is what we did by contract. We usually get this done by March, April, but we had to push it back due to the soft road conditions. So we contracted with Mark Mayer to haul all of these blue miles. That cost us about $487,000 in about a quarter of the county. Not quite a quarter, but our crews are hauling what we call spot rock. We haul the individual spots that are bad, so we don't put them on the map. These are just the roads that the entire mile is rock. We hauled about an additional $400,000 worth of rock with our own crews. I touched on the new salt contract. We had a salt issue again last year at delivery time. We struggled with. Fortunately, we started out with two. This is our bin and the beta that can hold about 1,000 tons. We did this one using salt sand mix, and this is all salt. We made a decision to go all salt and pack it in there like we did because our contractor last year only supplied about 75 tons out of the 800 we had in the contract. By the time the winter was over, we got the rest after winter was done. It's just because it was good. And that's all due to a bottleneck in Ames where they get it off the railroad. They can only get so much off at a time, and the railroad only delivers so often. So we're always fighting against DOT and Ames for our salt deliveries. The good news is we got a new supplier, Black Scrap out of Nebraska. We're up to $77 a ton, and last year it was $67 a ton that we sold. DOT warned us it was kind of going out of February due to some large issues on Mississippi River and stuff. But Black Scrap will deliver directly by truck, so you won't have the bottleneck issue and see how it goes with them, but hopefully it'll happen.
So that's about a 14% increase that we'll bear this year.
Did we build, do you happen off the top of your head to remember in our fiscal year 20 budget what you allocated for salt? Did we increase the amount in case we have that added?
We left it about, our normal was about $100,000 that is salt and our account support. We put this, as I noted here, due to the late deliveries, $35,000 out of our team actually carried over from last week, so we got paid on that.
Okay, thank you.
Construction project updates, these are the seven that we have planned for this year. It's typical for the county, especially Torrey County, because we're competing with Ames, because most of the work in the summer, when the students are gone, our projects get pushed back to the fall. So we have one paving that's E63 going out of Collins into Marshall County, and then we have six box culverts there. The contract is supposed to be moving in towards the end of the month. The other good thing about delaying the box culverts is our project inspector has been on my military for about a month and a half, so he'll be back in next week, so it's good timing on that. Construction project design, 220th Street with 13 extension paving plans are complete, and we are working on right-of-way purchasing. We bonded for a number of paving projects, and this is one of them. I will need to be talking to Lisa fairly soon on the timing of bonding. We're not going to need it for construction probably until about a year from now when we start paving that road, but we do need to purchase the right-of-way for that, so we'll push that off as long as we can, but we'll probably have to bond a little sooner than we originally thought just to pay for the additional right-of-way. We started design work on 530th, which is the university section south of Ames. We're coordinating some utility work. We have a major water line and some utility poles that we're working on that project. Working on the Hickory Grove overlay project and seven other bridge culverts for the next. The bridge bundling grant, that's something we've been hopefully waiting on a response from the feds for about 6 months now. The longer it gets delayed, the less likely it's going to happen. But the DOT was pretty positive that we get about $400,000 for Story County to replace that bridge that's circled there on the 18th. It's getting delayed for some reason, we're not sure why. And the FY budget, final expenditures were about 85% of our amended budget amount, and that was almost entirely due to the carryover construction. We have every year in the fund. We're never sure if the construction can happen before or after July 1st. If none of that happens, we've all got pushed back to the end of the spend. The major items that we overran in FY19 were overtime. We doubled our overtime to $50,000. We spent $100,000 to the severe February and March winter conditions. And we had a lot due to the severe winter. It also affects our equipment. So we have some major equipment repairs. Picture our mortgage that's completely dismantled in the shed. That repair alone was $70,000.
Darren, on the overtime, we have some caps when we're moving over from the general fund and the rural services fund over to how much the law will allow us to put into the secondary roads fund. Is overtime included in part of that entire cap amount, or is payroll separate from that?
No, that is included.
All right. Thank you.
We're able to manage a few bridge repairs in between all of our road damage repairs this spring. One was a driveway bridge. We don't have a couple of these, fortunately, but this is only to provide access to the farm ground behind it, but it's in the county right away, so we are responsible for it. We debated this a year or so ago whether we replace this with a new culvert or just try to repair the structure. We made the decision to try to repair it for now. The landowner was complaining that his equipment keeps getting bigger and heavier, and the bridge wasn't able to take it because it was posted at least 12 tons. We got this up with about $10,000 of repairs to complete the deck, and we doubled up the beam spacing. So it's a legal bridge now, and we concreted the back wall.
since we did this, he has called me. He's not happy still with it. The 16-foot wide, which should be wide enough to get most of the things in there. He was still liking the cold. Hopefully he doesn't sway over notice and crack the bridge, but we'll keep a close eye on for a while. We're going to post it, even though it's legal. A legal bridge, we typically don't load post, so we're just going to post it in case he does overload it. It could be some more legal bridge to go after and be overloaded. Great bridge.
Am I correct in saying that as I look at this photo that the original bridge we replaced, is it the abutments? Is that the right term?
Correct.
Yeah, right there. Came out that far. It came out, a couple
of
years. Thank you.
We didn't sort. And this, if you recall, we got this in that parcel that there's the heart of my bike trail.
Yeah.
A lot of these farmers take access off of that. And one way they can do it without doing that. There is some culvert issues on the heart of my trail. The farmers are concerned about it, well, they don't like to use it. This should help the situation for a while. Another bridge is what we call the Isaac Walton Bridge down south. It's called Shooting Ranges, the flooding events this spring. Damaged the first beam and took out the guardrail. We ended up just removing one beam. This was a little bit wider bridge than a lot of ours. We took out that first beam and put the railing back on top. So it should have a little effect in this. It's one of those bridges on our list of bridges that we're probably going to raise today. Once we're trying to get as much life out of it as we possibly can. We designed a new bridge about 10 years ago, and it was going to be about $400,000 or $500,000. No, I'm scratching. It was going to be 400 to 500 feet deep.
Oh,
so much more expensive than that. Because it's such a low area, it just overtops it. So we decided it's not that important. A number of also holes behind back walls opened up. We've been dealing with the flooding. We put a lot of concrete box culverts, and one of the positives of those has a floor. These little wood bridges do not have floors, so the stream constantly is degrading and getting deeper, and when it gets deeper below the back wall, it sucks the material underneath and creates these stuck holes. It is a safety concern, and so the culverts, I do like them because of that as well. More issues on, this was Memorial Day weekend, the day before landowner called. This is a dead-end road in the far southeast corner of the county. They live at the end of the dead-end road, and the pipe, their only access out, they said there was a hole, but when we got there, the hole went all the way through the road. So we had to call it. You're going to hear me comment a lot about Friday, but crews are not working on Friday. On Friday, we've had something come up, we've had call crews, and so Murphy's Law, I guess, but it happened even last weekend again with flooding almost every week. But more culverts that were had a hole all the way through the roads we had to fix, simple stuff. And then early spring flooding always creates the farm debris gets pushed into our culverts and bridges, and again, this was a Friday. We called in a mortar grader on a Friday to come. This was culvert was completely clogged with corn stalks, and it's hard to tell what edge of the road is when the corn stalks get built up and they actually slipped off the road because of that. The tow truck came back, we had to tow that one out, and they're so deep. Another towing situation, this is just an air driver went off the bridge and they had to pick it up out of the stream. Stuff like that happens quite often, unfortunately. Mostly younger drivers, but driving me fast. Move on to the Hickory Grove culverts. This is a road we had closed around Hickory Grove because this is the picture conservation centers. They're draining the lake, so both sides typically just equalize through these pipes, but since they drain one side, it sucked all the water through, and it actually went underneath the culverts. These are very large culverts. We tried to sandbag it the best we could. That wasn't enough. It continually sucked on through until it started taking material and made its way up to the shoulder. At that point, I said, we got to close couldn't do any repairs until the water got below that level, so it was kind of a waiting game. As the water settled through here, it sucked more material out, and that culvert actually settled and turned, so the road dropped like 6 inches. It's hard to see in pictures. The road was already closed at that point. So we weren't sure if it was repairable at that point, but we did come up with a repair option. We worked with Denco, who does the grouting, pressure grouting. They put these pillows in here and fill them with grout. That sealed off the end, and then they grouted from the top. Grout came off the bottom. There's two of these very large pipes that are 18 foot wide each. People actually bolt through these. Pictures of the pressure grouting, pressurizing that in. It does it so much pressure it actually starts bending the culvert underneath. So I had one little indentation, one of them that they cut off. And then in the end, we had to do the concrete patch. We did that with our crews to replace the bump in the subtle portions. Got the patch done. We're hoping to get this open, but what's going on now, as you can see the dirt right here, they're hauling, I got a better picture after it. Part of the contract through conservation is they got to remove all this silt out here. It's a lot of sloppy material. They put them in trucks with these excavators. And then the truck come out of this driveway and drive down the road, not even a mile that drive. It's such mucky material that it leaks out the back of the truck, and they really don't have a way to prevent that, so it just makes an absolute mess out of the highway. There's a row of houses behind this to the south. They have access around the lake, a paved route to get out. Conservation has talked with them, asked if they'd be comfortable leaving the road closed. I have concern about safety. We require them to bring a broom out because it gets muddy and then it rains and it's slick. And then they come out and broom it and you can't see it. I think the best option is to leave this closed. They keep saying there's 2 to 3 weeks of work left here, but every time it rains, it does come back. I think we got a picture. Yeah, that last rain event we got, this is their excavator. They did not remove it from the hallway.
Yeah, we're still there as of yesterday.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we turn it into a water feature?
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll even do with it by now.
But that's kind of what's going behind the road closure. We haven't had a lot of complaints on the closure. I kind of wanted to get it open for the holiday, before the holiday weekend, that we agreed to leave it closed, and hopefully it gets it done in a couple of weeks. The S27 issue we had to close that 2 weeks ago now. A hole had shown up right in the wheel path. And whenever you see a hole on top, that means there's much bigger wood underneath. So this one was a little scary safety wise, but we got in there right away that same day and patched it, knowing we didn't know what was going on below, but we had to throw it back open. So we had a temporary patch with the Memex, which screwed up really fast. We were almost certain the cause was these are both utility locates, the water line and the gas line, or electric, that's electric going back to the new house. We were almost sure they bored through a road tile and caused that collapse. But we dug the tile. Tiles are usually on the outside. This road was relocated before they paved it a long time ago, so the tile is actually almost in the center line of the road, which is not a good situation. But we had about a 25-foot stretch of tiles completely collapsed and broken. The utilities were much deeper, so they didn't cause it. We can't prove they caused it. So we can't tell them for all it's worth, but they may have caused it. So it sure appears the tile has been like that for a long time. So we got the tile fixed, and we had to put a patch back. And there was another issue just down the road. The tile was plugged on the outside with these big trees. Water was actually shooting 3 feet up in the air through the pavement crack. So much pressure on that tile. There was a 5-inch root in the tile. So we got that fixed while we had the road closed.
Wow.
S27 is a very difficult road for us to close. It's 8 or 9 mile stretch with no paving side road. So if we ever close this, the traffic just starts taking all the gravel and creates a dusty mess. We got it done in about 3 days and put a lot of things for it.
thank you for that and all the hard work the crew had to do.
Out shop update. We've moved into the Roland and Kelly shops. This is a picture of the Roland shed. Bathrooms were built by staff in the downtown crew planners, and they did a good job with that. We plan to build a salt bin at Kelly this fall. That will also help us with our salt issue. More storage we have than we stored before the winter starts, better off for our kitchen season. We're getting close for some crew buildings. We put $50,000 in our budget for building maintenance. The hoop structure probably cost around $15,000. We were going to do the slab ourselves, but we got so much other stuff going on. We have kids measurements, maybe asphalt with concrete, see what the contractors can do the slab for. And we're purchasing some concrete blocks and that to build the walls for the settlement. DF tanks have been installed for all the murders. They now take the depth of the diesel exhaust hood and a separate gas tank. We were able to delay that 5 years by doing the leak last time, but now the exhaust burning system is what it is. That's what's been so expensive in our trucks. Those systems tend to have issues that are very expensive to fix, and that's why the cost of truck maintenance is a little bit up. Our leak murders should be under warranty. Hopefully, we won't have that expense. We get the tank installed in our house shop so that supply fluid. Culvert shed, a couple issues here I want to remind you. We're still keeping an eye out. This is our shed right here, a fairly small lot that we have. This shed, we looked at that landowner is maybe interested in selling. He's still trying to decide how much he wants and if he really wants to move it on. So we're still, we haven't given an offer yet, but if we get to that point, I'll come to the board and we'll see reports come for the offering for that building. The front face of this wall has some issues that need repaired, and for now we just moved, it really just one more grader operator, and new rolling shed, temporary closure. We figure out what's going on with this building, because if we buy this, we're probably just going to use it to salt shed and move that front wall so that it doesn't need to be repaired. It's fine.
I like how you described some issues with the front.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very similar looking at to this shed. This is our AIM shed. I'm bringing this one up because we are officially done using this shed. We used it the past winter for the salt bed behind it, and now we won't have to do that again. So, facilities is using, or emergency management is using this bay for their trailer that they have. They need electricity, but not heat. We'd like these utilities out of our name, so we'll be talking with facilities and folks at the Board of Health involved if we want to keep this building and sell it or whatever.
So,
we
want to buy Ontario.
Yes.
Yes. This is a fairly old picture because now there's a new storage facility building right up around. It's pretty tight to it. And that property owner has wanted to buy it for many years to get it out of the way. And you see it's a little rough now, but it's got like 5 more years of age on it, so we can keep it. So it's going to participate in the future.
I think you answered a question I was getting ready to ask, which is why can emergency management move its trailer over to the farm, to the fairgrounds, you know, along with other equipment? There's no electricity at the fairgrounds, is there? I'm not sure, but when you said they needed electricity. So anyway, but that would be something we could consider.
With that.
Okay. Great.
We talked about the service blade replacement agreement, and not much more to add on that. Let's say we'll have hundreds of oversized loads to permit, not weights, just size. And that works good to start this summer. Radios, we're starting to get pricing information in on the new radio system. We've got what the actual radios are cost. We haven't got radio cost, but there'll be a maintenance fee on top of that. Once we get all the information, we'll have to weigh our current electronic engineering system. They say there's an option to move that over to a digital system. So we've got to wait and see what we need when we get all the costs. So our current fee did go up with electronic engineering to $31,900, about $6,000-$7,000 costing.
So, Darren, as we start to look more at the radios, given the fact that the county has already approved up to $3 million bonding for the entire interoperability radio system, so these radios will be covered under that amount of money, or are you looking at buying separately? For your department, because this came up during budget time, and I was, you know, as I was kind of surprised that it hadn't, that you were talking about it separately, and I remember the last thing I heard Rick Sanders say was something about that maybe keeping radios on stock and, you know, what was going to happen there, but I'd understood that you were going to be part of those discussions. So can you guys bring me up to date? Why would we leave secondary roads on one radio system with the use of one radios? And maybe I'm connecting the two and I shouldn't, all right, when everybody else is going to switch to a separate radio system.
I think that's what we're paying the cost. Doesn't sound like it's high enough to make cost payments, so I think we're probably going
to go going that route, being with StoryCom.
Yeah. It's interoperability issue. We don't necessarily need that with all our equipment. If we had one or two radios, we can probably get by with that, but it sounds like we're probably going to switch.
Has Gina called you?
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
So just to give general feedback here, as you move forward with StoryCom and, you know, within our internal departments, that I would certainly like for the board to be able to consider, if it comes down to a cost issue, for the board to make the decision whether they want to allocate the money to the various departments who would need mostly secondary roads, who would be deployed in a real emergency situation and have need for that interoperability. I'm just hoping that it doesn't come down to strictly a decision about we'll go with the less expensive EE system for secondary roads, when the whole point of all of these entities combined expending about $11 million will be to try and get to everybody can talk to each other for that emergency situation.
Well, I think most agencies have money in their budget already for radios. And it's a work in progress in terms of the operating budget and what everything's going to cost there. That's why I asked Darren if he'd talk with Gina, because she's got the best sense of that right now.
Yeah.
Well,
I'll make this decision probably well before the next election, because that's when the tower may go away at the current season, and they have to be set up on a temporary system so they can move it
in. Yeah, just a year temporary.
There'll be, I think, a pretty temporary radio system. They won't have the whole world system ready.
Okay, bye. I look forward to further conversation on it.
Not much to add on the cameras for roads near the Carver intersection. We've had a number of meetings with the city and the developer on possible partnership on funding near roundabout or light. Probably the most recent development is the developer all of a sudden, they were kind of the push behind the timing of it. Now they're kind of backing off, but they don't feel like they need it quite so soon. So probably
open up
time for negotiation. I don't
think
they have
anything
to add on that.
Ball's in the city's court right now, and they're going to get back to us on next meeting.
Well, this is likely not to be a fiscal year 20 project that we're going to have to worry about then?
I would hope it would be a fiscal year 20 project, but we don't know yet.
All right, thank you. Okay.
Just touch base quick on two DOT projects that are affecting both in the same area. 260th year, they did the new bridges on I-35, but
they're hauling a lot of that dirt out of the new big ditch along 260 here and really damaging the road. They hauled a lot of rock to it and put dust control down on it for us, and that's ongoing at least for another couple weeks. Also on 245th, that's the road to get back to the Flyover Bridge construction and the borrow pit that they had. They continually put dust control on that for us as well. And lastly, not a DOT project that the state of Nevada had, the Clayton Way closed for quite a while. MC's improvement, intersection improvement, which puts a lot of traffic over to 13th Street travel, so we have a lot of information on that. That's now back open. Couple drainage district updates, DD20, few issues with this. This is the railroad crossing. We recently let it came in a little above our estimate, but we went ahead and improved it because it needs to be done. That was $74,000 for that. I want to kind of show you, this is the stuff that gets us through Pernald. Fixing this railroad issue does nothing to help Pernald, unfortunately, because that's how it goes on down beyond that point. That won't help fix it, but they are included in the branch, so they will get the bill for some of that work. I don't think their bills are real high in the city of Pernald. The other issues in town, let me show you where that is. Down at the south end is where I got a blow up. This is the big tree that causes a lot of problems. The tower runs right through here. That tree is very large and has clogged that tower many times with roots. We were planning on doing a replacement in there. There's a ton of utilities in here, which made it extra difficult to excavate down and replace that with a solid tile so the roots won't get in it. But recently, this has a brand new owner who's now more open to allowing to take that tree out. In fact, they want it out. So we'll get some estimates. We have one, I believe, about $3,500 to see for the reason because it's a very large tree and it's power lines overhang the tower. It's going to be difficult tree removal, but so I think we're going to go with the tree removal option instead of replacing this tile. And that brings in the John Hunter discussion. John Hunter, he would like a new tile put in here, connected into the district tile. This kind of sits full of water at times. He's got his little tank out there. I don't know why it's quite so far from his house, but we've kind of agreed to put a tile in here to try to drain as much as that we can. We're waiting on that, so we're going to tie it to this tile contract. So if we don't do that, we're just going to put this in with our crews and hopefully do that. Yet. I've got a call from them as of yesterday, and we'll be back in the meeting. I'm sure you've asked when it's going to happen. We'll get to it as soon as we can. It's just not disturbed that priority. It just has some funny water right here. It's not hurting that much.
The last time I talked to him, he understood that you've got lots of things you're working on right now. But I didn't want you to forget him.
And the other issue is, I believe, at least this time around, when we got that big rain event last week, they called in frantic, which happened. Their basement flooded down. Mm-hmm. There's very little we can do about it. All rain through a district pile. We get a 3 to 5 inch rain that you learn about coefficients that should take 3 to 4 weeks to drain. It's really a farm pile. It's not a storm sewer. Unfortunately, but that's how the drainage is set up there. They want more done. Jerry's tried to work with the town. And one thing we're hoping, you sent that survey out for some financial data and hopefully try to get some grants. And that wasn't well responded to, so that kind of fell through. So don't have a lot of other options in town, but for all drainage isn't a problem, especially this area right here, these homes. It's full of water a lot. Only way for water to get out is through the
Darren, on the John Hunter project, is he paying for that, or are we considering it a repair?
For some reason, this is still a county road. It ends right here. It's the stuff that goes really nowhere. I wanted to just vacate that, get it out of the county's hands, but if you remember at that time the board was up, we should still put the tile in first.
All right, thank you.
The other issue in town, let me show you where this is, right up on this corner. We
had an issue with a lot of logs, firewood being pushed out too far. They have been pushed back. They were out much further than this. It goes the other direction too. I don't have a picture of that. I think this vehicle has been removed now. He's done a lot to try to help, but we've got it about this stage and it's more or less confusing. The right of way line actually goes bump into the house for a few, so he can't remove everything. So it's a difficult situation, but a lot of landowners get frustrated with the non-curvies and logs that get piled up there. We sent violations a couple of times and met with him about a month ago out there and he said this is far from going.
When you say we, has it been you and Jerry, you, Jerry and Margaret, some other combination thereof?
I work with Eastman County Green Office for violations.
All right.
We've had town meetings with Jerry involved.
Okay.
Jerry is aware of this too.
So we've turned out the entire crew, is what you're saying.
CBA, this is a small district, and I kind of want to make you aware of it because it's right here where the major holes, these are the type of holes that you can fit a semi truck in. The tile is so deep, it creates very large truck holes. We had a contractor fix that for about $11,200 in a very small district, so only a couple of properties in getting that bill. The same thing happened just a year or two ago, so it's very similar to this district too. So they may come in and request all the district to look at, but that would be very cost expensive. Probably okay with some smaller bills at this point.
Just for info, we did have a house move. This was on 290th, right by I-35. The DOT bought this house out for their future widening project by I-35. The first move was the garage. That one we actually had to remove a guardrail off the bridge on one side to get it to fit through, because that headed toward the main. The other one was much larger. This was 45 foot wide, but it went to the east across the interstate. We didn't have a lot of way, so that was fairly smooth. We had to move a few times. Comment on the second application of dust control is scheduled for the last week of July. We currently have an equipment operator one position open. We're currently doing interviews for that fill. And two issues that popped up, I just want to make you aware of since I put the report together. Really wasn't part of the flooding up here, but they got some rain down here as well. But we have this structure on 675th right here. It's closed, and it probably will be a permanent closure. This was in the program a couple years ago. Because of the skew angle of the culvert and the size, it's going to be very costly. It was $400,000 to replace it. We decided because it's a half-mile road and the property owners can go out either direction, it may not affect them all that much. We're going to try to buy more time out of this culvert, but that's a picture of the culvert. So what happened is the water went underneath it. This just came up this afternoon, so I haven't even looked at it yet, but I think this back hole over here has collapsed. I don't think there's any repair at this point. This is going to be a permanent closure for a while. We can bring it up again in our five-year program discussion.
Okay.
It's worthwhile to do a full replacement on it. I don't know where that just happened. And then lastly,
how utilized is that bridge?
I don't have the traffic count offhand, but it's fairly low traffic.
Okay.
I guess it would be 10 to 20 vehicles a day. There's a few houses, and I believe a new one may have just been built just on the north side of this. They have access out, but it's probably more of a farmer issue.
Thank you.
Last, I just want to comment on the pipeline construction and completion. Just received some information. They were grouping all 13 counties together for completion. Story County's been completed for some time, but they did want for the board to move forward with signing off on completion until all 13 counties were completed. But the utility board gave guidance that they should be doing it individual county why that's important is that opens up the door to private property owners to start legal action in 90 days if they feel some kind of
who is they? Is that Dakota Access or is that ISG our representative?
ISG is the one that got the guidance.
So they are the they that was holding everything for all 13 counties.
So the last correspondence I saw indicated that we would have a report soon and we should wait till we got the report to do a completion letter.
See, that's where it stands now, and I don't have, you're going to look to see if you can find that form.
I found the form. I put it on the agenda, and then I got some correspondence saying, no, we're supposed to wait until we got the report from IMG.
I will double check with ISG. They would start turning over documents to us, but I haven't seen any of that yet.
Yeah.
And that corresponds with we would get the documents first when Ethan Anderson and I met with Eric. Wasn't that his name?
Evan,
thank you. Okay. With Evan from ISG at several months ago. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you for a really complete report. Let me know, let the public know exactly what's going on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jaron. Jerry, you're up now.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good
morning, Jerry.
Down probably about 23-24% from the previous second quarter from 2018, but we're real close to 2017 second quarter. We increased a little bit on other permits, which include accessory additions to houses, decks, accessory buildings, those kinds of things. Down a little over half in terms of single family dwellings. It might be due to weather. You know, this is April through June. We did have a really wet, cold January through March. Interest rates went up a little bit. That might have something to do with it. There could be a number of factors. We reviewed quite a few agricultural exemptions. Again, any request for a house, accessory building, use of land, if it's primarily adapted or used for agricultural purposes, while it's used for that purpose, it's to be exempt from local zoning. So it's not uncommon to review quite a few applications. We still, even though there might be an exemption, we request the applicant, property owner, to submit the zoning permit application along with the agricultural exemption application and those are the return. The value is up a little bit. We did have a few single-family homes that were above $500,000 in value, so that increased the value from the previous 2018 second quarter. This is the coverage map, and you can see there's a lot of activity in the western quarter, western third. We've got dwellings represented with in yellow, some commercial improvements in red, and then sign permits. You can see a lot of activity around Huxley and Cambridge area for single-family construction. These are development permit applications, really close to 2018 second quarter level, but down a few. We received and reviewed seven subdivisions. Most of those were residential parcel subdivisions. There was an agricultural subdivision, five conditional use permits for a number of things. Site plans, four, and then it varied from there. Any sort of infringement plan and vacation, annexation request within the Ames Urban Fringe insurance plan, a variance, and then a rezoning request.
Jerry, speaking of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, have you received any further communication from the City of Ames consultants or the City of Ames about the interview that you and Deb Shildroth attended related to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan? That was about 2 months ago.
Communication with the consultants, had some discussions, brief discussions with the planning council director about their process. They're not even quite halfway through their process.
All right.
But as far as like the details of touching base, we haven't really started those discussions, but they know that the board is very interested in keeping that Ames Urban Fringe Plan agreement active.
Okay, good. I've been watching the council agendas and haven't seen that come up as a topic even, you know, but I just wanted to make sure. I know you're being very diligent about making sure that they don't forget us.
Yeah, they're really focusing on their conference. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Other activities, there's actually three different stages of a conditional use permit. The major would be usually the first, a brand new application. Those are reviewed internally by staff at the county. They go on to the Planning and Zoning Commission for a recommendation, then on to the Board of Adjustment for action. A minor modification, existing conditional use permits, and there's minor changes to it, but it's enough that it involves an internal review of county staff, and then they're acted on by the Board of Adjustment. And then we have insignificant modifications to existing permits, and there's really limited impact to a site or to a neighborhood, and so we have this ability to review those internally. Oftentimes they relate to improvements to communication towers, such as swapping out antennas for new antennas, that kind of thing. But we only had one this second quarter. We had four of those in 2018, second quarter. Property research, seven this second quarter. Property research, again, property owners, people who are interested in acquiring property can request us to do some evaluation as to whether or not the land is highly productive. And so we use our land evaluation site assessment process to do that. We had seven applications this second quarter and 15 in 2018, second quarter. Conceptual review, that's the first stage in a review of a development case, application for CUPs, rezoning requests, variance requests. We had five of those. That was the same number that we had for 2018. The other activities, the U.S. Census Complete Count Committee, the board appointed me as the liaison. Linda attended. We had probably around 8 to 9 cities represented, city clerks, city staff. Had a really good discussion. We went through, what the U.S. Census is looking for and the goals that they have to count all of the people in the county at once and at the right location. We talked a lot about the hard to count people. Traditionally it's been 0 to 5 year olds, the young people, 18 to 24, veterans, people that don't speak English very well. There's a number of persons who are hard to count. And we've reached out to Carla and Aaron to try to see if we can get some dialogue going, including, and I think Brett has been invited. I think he's done some things to try to communicate the importance to veterans. But we're planning to meet to get some dialogue going to see if there's some things that their department can do or their network that they have to kind of find ways that are efficient, economical to reach the hard to count. We've been told from a representative from the U.S. Census that there will be materials that we can provide that, that we can hand out at festivals, parades, that kind of thing, but we have not seen anything yet. But things like that would be helpful. Leanne has spoken on the radio show. We talked about putting some things in our county newsletters. We can use our website to get the word out. And we think that the more more that we do now against census, the census day is actually April 20, so it's going to come pretty fast, but the more that we do now, the better off that we'll be. And the goal is that you want everybody to self-renew, right? You want them to use either the paper document that they'll get in the mail, or you use their devices or phone to tap into the network to self-renew. So that's the goal. There's also a program that we learned about a few months ago called the New Construction Program, and they're really just trying to keep track of housing starts, which equate to address and location. March 15 of 2018 through, they want to know if it will be constructed by the end of April of 2020. So we're going to be using the same program that we use to assist cities to identify addresses, and the information that's communicated from the Census Bureau is that it's pretty easy to use. Talking to GIS Matt and Emily when she was here, we thought that we probably need to reach out to see if some of the smaller cities needed some assistance. We did that. I only heard from one city of Gilbert was requesting some assistance, so I think we'll probably need to reach out again to see if they'll need some help. And again, it's a new construction mid-March through April 1, so we need to provide information to the U.S. Census Board. Had a victory on appeal, thanks to Ethan's work in the attorney's office. I'm not going to go into detail, I'll let them do that, but we've been told, and I think I can say this, is that the opponents are considering to appeal the appeal through the Iowa Supreme Court, so we're waiting for follow-up on that. But our goal all along is to receive voluntary compliance, and with the goal of getting down to the number that we think they are permitted, which is the 34 units. So, and that's what we're striving for with this case. These are some things that the Board of Adjustment ruled on recently. Bradbury Hill Perkins, Brad Perkins, it's a property that there's been some conditional use permits granted for different things. Mr. Perkins resubmitted his bed and breakfast application. Initially, it was approved by the Board of Adjustment to have 8 units and a separate venue for events. He submitted a brand new application just for 4 guest units. He has a plan to add an addition to the house to be ADA compliant and no event venue. And that did go through the review process and got approved. The next thing is the Ames Water Well project.
I would like to ask about Raspberry Hill. All right. So with a new plan and a new, it sounds like a business plan also, but what does that do to the cases, the court cases that are against this property? That there are 2, correct?
Still? Well, you've got the bed and breakfast, you've got campground.
Right.
And then YSS.
So look, are there 3? There are 3 lawsuits. All right.
We're approved on that property.
And have we heard, we know that YSS is the first one, but the next 2 are against the Perkins plan.
Yeah, the first 2 the judge decided and ruled that there wasn't adequate information for the Board of Adjustment to rule that they didn't have written findings of fact.
All right.
The county, through the board's action, has decided to challenge those decisions, mm-hmm. And I understand that's still ongoing.
I think I see a nod from the attorney in the back, right?
Yeah. But I mean, ultimately, there's, to my knowledge, there's no restriction on the number of conditional uses that a property or a property owner could have, and you know, so ultimately, likely comes down to a decision of the property owner, which is the McKays still own that property.
Right.
The Perkins have this intent to acquire. I think they have a lease agreement right now, but they do intend to acquire.
Okay. Thank you for that extra update.
The well project is 3. 2 wells will be constructed. constructed in Ames. One would be constructed just west of Stagecoach Road. They're trying to improve their capacity. They've got some wells in the downtown area that are not as efficient as some of their other wells. And they don't want to run into a situation where they have to do restrict use type of thing with users. And so that went through the review process and got approved. Darren talked a little bit about Next Era Energy. They're converting 100 units in Warren, Lincoln, and Sherman townships. They're taking off the blades. They're replacing generators and the gearbox assemblies. And so they intend to get started sometime in July and then finish up sometime in November. So that's their schedule. But the current ordinance has a provision for on shadow flicker. There's a maximum amount of shadow flicker that can occur, in this case on a dwelling. There's a maximum number of hours, which they would be exceeding. They've done their analysis and have determined that initially there was like 21 dwellings that would be impacted by the shadow flicker that would not be meeting the requirement. So our ordinance says either they have to meet a requirement, not exceed the threshold, or they negotiate with the property. So they received approval for all but 8 of the proposed conversions. And so they intend to come back when they complete their negotiations with all of the landowners. Manoa Construction, that was a ball pit on 245th Street. They used that dirt for the new relocated the off-ramp from I-35 to Highway 30. They also used it to shore up the cranes that placed all the steel to the front of the bridge. Well, when they constructed it, it did not meet the front yard setback. And so they requested a variance. Part of what we were struggling with is the slope. They're supposed to have a 5-1 slope, which is a gradual slope from the start to where the slope touches the water. And so their slope, they met the slope requirement, but not the setback. The setback was supported by the property owner. The good thing is they're a dead-end road situation, so traffic is pretty limited. There are some houses in there, but again, it's not a true road. So that variance was approved. Current cases, first one is it turned out to be a rezoning request. Property owner, who was a veterinarian, 130th Street, sold the property to a new veterinarian who has more staff than what the home business ordinance permits, and it's beyond what the minimal easing would allow with the amendment that we went through. So they're going to be requesting a rezoning to A2, which would work out if it's approved, and then that's going to come to the board supervisors ultimately. Dakin's Lake Cabin on 130th Street. This will be the first cabin that they're proposing to construct. That's a CUP. Conservation practices, geothermal, they're going to collect rainwater. They're really trying to be very conscientious of the environment and conserving the natural resources there for this project. Stormwater erosion control ordinance. We are ready to take this to the Planning and Zoning Commission. This will be tomorrow. So this should be before the board in a couple of weeks. And so we're trying to bring out really more clarity in the ordinance, bring out some of the information that's referenced in the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual. We're really matching up with, we're not creating the wheel here at all, we're matching up with some of the other counties in the state. We're similar in our requirements with the city of Ames. And this is something that we've been working on for a number of months, and we actually put together a focus group that provided us with some really good feedback. There's some consulting engineers, some environmental interests. Linda attended that meeting, and it really helped kind of focus our work, and like I said, this is ready to go, and we're going to be talking about this tomorrow. Subdivision Streets, thank you, Gabe, for assisting. This is something we have been asked, it's on our work program. We are to assess all of the private subdivisions and determine whether or not, you know, which ones were publicly dedicated for public use and do an inventory of all the signage. Because we've had some requests from property owners to install certain signage to restrict the use or entry. And so there's, Gabe learned that we've got over 80 subdivisions, and this is something that he took on when he started here at the end of May. And so probably what we're going to do, since there's so many of these, is we're going to hit the growth townships. We're going to be meeting on this tomorrow, and we're going to start on Thursday and just go out and inventory. We're able to look at Street Google View. At some of the subdivisions, a lot of that data is full. So that's why we need to get out in the field. And so we're going to hit the top three most populated townships with the most number of subdivisions.
And which are the three most populated?
Franklin, help me out.
Franklin,
Washington.
Washington and
Nevada.
Nevada, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So we're looking forward to getting going on that. And then, of course, you know, we're going to put together some information, and we'll likely be involved in the county insurance office while we find. Debris management sites, another thing we've been working on a long time. We've got two new property owners who get contracts with DuPont to store stove material. The way our current lease is set up, though, that we will compensate if we use the site, but what we're hearing from these property owners is that they want some type of compensation stipend, like on a monthly basis. It's not the same as probably what they're getting with their contracts with DuPont. But we, you know, we're trying different things. Thrown out, you know, the possibility of maybe the county acquiring some property. Some of the counties that we learned own their own property, and it's always a lot easier if you have ownership. And if you need, you have a disaster, you've got a place to go to bring the material to do the sorting. Which, you know, I think there's still some merit to that. Because I think about a year ago we had two property owners who initially were interested. But then when they learn about what the impact will be to their property, they lose interest real quick because there's going to be a lot of heavy equipment, a lot of machinery. And so, you know, once the site is no longer needed for debris management, it takes a long time for that soil to recruit and be productive again. So the two that we had last year are no longer interested. One was indicating that he wanted more money to reimburse back from that person. So likely you'll, you know, this is something that because it's a work program item, will, and the nature of this will be working with the county attorney's office and the finding some commission and the board. But, so we've got two likely candidates. On the private side, we've got two cities who have expressed some interest in Maxwell. They would be willing to work with the county to allow us to use part of their site for just the landscaping material, tree that gets generated, which is pretty common with like a tornado or a high wind incident. And then the city of Nevada, the city administrator, has expressed some interest in working with us. So details need to be worked out, but we've got at least four locations that we think we can locate.
You said DuPont. So DuPont still holding the arrangements with these landowners? Verbio didn't take it over.
What we've heard is that their contracts are like expiring this summer. That's what we've heard.
Okay. All right.
And so some of these sites are good because they've got access already. They've, you know, the culverts in place.
Right.
Approaches. There's a base that's down that they're using to store the solar material. Mm-hmm. So they're that much further ahead than a site that doesn't have any improvements.
Okay. All right.
So, I mean, this is the...
Which is part of the reason maybe why the landowners are asking for a fee from us then, right?
Well, and they know that, you know, it's with the impact of storing heavy materials and machinery, it does impact the productivity for growing things. So that's why they're interested in what we're saying. And someone said if we don't work something out, they're interested in something else, but... And that something else has to be something that's permitted under our zoning regulations, or it has to be an agricultural incentive.
Thank you, Jerry.
Land evaluation or land development regulations, we're doing a complete review. There's a few things that we need to make adjustments on with regard to federal changes in communication, tower language. And then the state law passed, the state legislation passed a law for non-conforming mobile home parks to allow them to swap out old for new on non-conforming situations. So we may need to look at that. But again, we're looking at all of the ordinances and we're about halfway through that process. Complaints, we've got a handful of them. Crestview Mobile Home Park, our department's been involved since 2017. There's been a lot of improvement that has occurred there. Basically, it's down to removing three mobile homes. There's a few sheds that need to be removed. The debris, for the most part, that was on the north side of the site was removed. At least that's what it appeared when we showed up at the end of June. But there's quite a few semi-trucks, trailers, and vehicles that the property owner has indicated interest in acquiring, so he needs to either acquire them, go through the process to do that, or remove them from the property. Initially, we requested the property owner to give us a compliance schedule, which we did not receive, so we put together a compliance schedule for the property owner. We started end of May, and through the end of August is when we're hoping to have the site cleaned up. And it's something I think that is very achievable. We think we're rounding third base here, but you know, we have to have a willing property owner to participate in this process. So, and what we ended up doing is for the first items, it wasn't complete, so we wrapped that into the second. And then so the first and second will be wrapped into the third. We've got another section we'll be due at the end of July. Mm-hmm. And like I said, everything is supposed to be done by the end of August.
Is the property owner meeting you out there? So
yeah.
He is on premise when you're pointing out these items that still have not met the agreement schedule.
Yeah, every time before I go out, I call my email.
Okay.
He's been there, and oftentimes there's other people who are there expressing interest in acquiring the property. That's happened, I think, every time since I was there in April. I mean, all of the mobile homes are supposed to be gone at the end of November of
right.
last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got an extension through the letter that we sent in mid-March, but we discussed it and we actually showed up April 1 to assess, and that's when we learned that all the three.
So even though you've got these monthly inspections going forward, he's not meeting the goals of the monthly inspections, correct? I mean, he's behind on where he should be.
Yeah, I'd say debris. A lot of these units had a lot of stuff jammed underneath them, and then there was items that were within or beside of these units. And a lot of that material has been removed. So he took care of that because to shore up these mobile homes, they use these center blocks. And so there's a lot of those that are stacked.
Well, where I'm headed with this, all right, and with Ethan in the back, is that having sat on the board, as we went through the last 2 years with Crestview, I have some very strong feelings about him not complying with the newest set of extensions and work program that we have given him. And so I'm asking, at what point here can we go take action again? And who's going to take it? The Board of Health, or are we done with that? No, the Board of Health is now written off, so now it has to be we, the county, as planning and development. I'm not open to any real more tolerance for him. That's me. I'm one of three here, but I think it's about time for the board to talk about this. Unless there's some reason that you and Ethan tell us that we have to. But, I mean, we're just giving him 2 more months. And it's, for me, and I think probably a couple previous supervisors and some other people who've had to deal with him all along, we're done, you know?
Well, and there were, I think in April, there was like 10 checks. And now there's 4. And the message that I received from the property owner at the end of June was that somebody was coming to pick them up. This was on Friday. Somebody was coming to pick them up over the weekend. And I didn't go back out. I've been there many times. I didn't, but I was told that these sheds are going to be gone. So that was part of the second requirement that he was supposed to meet at the end of June.
And he didn't meet it.
Well, he got down to 4, and 3 of those were stacked. They were actually relocated to the northwest side of the site. And he said, somebody's coming to get those over the weekend. So that may have happened. So if the sheds are gone and the debris is gone, he's taking care of one of the requirements. So now we're focusing on the removal of the remaining 3 mobile homes and then the vehicles.
I feel like we are asking you, especially you, okay, and to put out a lot of energy to hold a hand to walk him through what should have happened a long time ago. And as I said, given the fact he was here multiple times, given that we have legal involved, he got an attorney. I mean, this is just a bad soap opera going on and on. So at this point, my concern is, while we want voluntary compliance, I really am concerned about how much time Jerry is having to spend on this, rather than us, let's just move forward and at least you devote your time to getting what we can legally out of it.
Right, and the letter that we sent, we indicated that we reserve the right, because our process starts with a notice of violation, and we are to give them 30 days to comply with whatever it is. And then if they don't comply, then we start the citation process. And that's when I start working with Ethan through the court process and set up a court date with a judge. So by the end of this month, we can send the notice of violation. And if it's not done by the end of August, then we can go to the citation process.
And why wouldn't we go to the citation process at the end of July?
We can.
That's what I'm asking, is that it come before us in July to give you directions to do that. One more month is just one more month of us paying you to hold his hand or babysit him or watch over, whatever term you want to use. I know I'm using kind of pejorative terms here, because I just feel we as a county should be done with this. We've spent enough expenditures, let's move on. So that's what I'm asking, that it be put on the agenda for before the end of July, so that we can give you direction to do that.
Okay.
I'm also feel like we've given this person plenty of time, but I trust your judgment as to when you want to bring it back.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm used to work with people, and we always, you know, through my training, you know, give people the benefit of the doubt. And if you see progress, each time you show up, then it's encouraging. And because a lot of times there's just this, you know, this stuff's been accumulated over many years. And it's, when you tell them it's got to go, and you give them 30 days or 60, it's just like they don't know how to deal with that. But if you can sort through, like, okay, these two things by this date, these two additional things. It kind of helps them. I mean, you see a couple, three below. These are messy properties. There's all kinds of things going on there. And we have compliance schedules of all three. And so far, we're seeing progress. But when you get to the point where you don't see progress, then I make my call to Ethan or county attorney's office and say, hey, we're not getting any change here. We need to go to a citation.
I know the previous board willingness to work with this property owner had a great deal to do with the fact that he was providing housing of almost last resort mm-hmm. to a very vulnerable population. And therefore, we felt, and I believe I can speak somewhat for that previous board, in that we felt it was worth the time and the energy and the effort that community services put in, that our legal department put in, that a former supervisor put in. I went out and checked on dogs. I mean, Jerry and Margaret and what they went out. And we did that all not for the benefit of this property owner. We did it for the benefit of the tenants to make sure that we could help them as much as possible transition out. There is no one, correct, living at this property anymore. There's not supposed to be, and we're down enough trailers that we're pretty sure not. Okay, because we then went through a period after it had been shut where we found out, allegedly, people were still living out there. So we continued to work with them, even though they had no potable water. We've reached the end of the line. I understand it's only 31 days, and so we've had discussions already since part of this new board has come up about how much extra time you give, all right? I am not in any way, Jerry, trying to undermine you and the good customer service you provide. I just am frustrated that there doesn't seem to be any reason to just drag it out one more month. But it is your time, and you are in control of your time about how you want to allocate it. So thank you all. I'll be quiet. Thank you. Okay.
Well, he has, if all his sheds are gone, he's not that far in this debris, like I said. It was primarily in that north side is where it was. And so a fourth of what's required has been addressed.
I think we'd all be comfortable with you not giving him any further extensions.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe going with that as a consensus. Can we do that?
Thank you. Yes. That's good.
Okay. Is that okay, Jerry?
That sounds good to me.
You can work with that? Okay.
I appreciate the input.
Okay. Thanks.
And then this just brings us to the work program. Each year we sit down with the Planning and Zoning Commission and the board and identify the special projects that our staff should be working on, with internally, with other departments, with other cities. Half of these are probably implementation requirements from the CPC comprehensive plan. Half of them are from other sources and staff generated things that came from the board or the Planning and Zoning Commission. So I think I went through most of these things. Our goal is, I think all of them but one we're actively working on, and we'd really like to get most of these things accomplished before the end of the summer. Like I said, because these are work program items, we go to the Planning and Zoning Commission to give them an update, get a recommendation before we come back to the board. So, I think I touched on just about everything. Do you have any questions?
No, very thorough report. Thank you.
It was. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to move us quickly through the next agenda items so we can get to number 17. Okay. Upcoming agenda items, is there anything that of note or... I am so sorry. Leanne, other report. Thank you, Shelley. Story County Fair 2019. Leanne, I'm sorry about that.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
I provided a memo
to the board for the discussion this morning. I'm coming for this new board to see what, if anything, you do want to do for presence of the county fair. It's coming up very soon, in a couple weeks. Fair board meets tomorrow, tomorrow evening, so I have an opportunity to have some discussion with them based on direction today. Last year, the board sitting at that time decided not to do the booth. I want to make sure that that's still the desire of this current board, and then there was some discussion of hosting a night of the fair with some swag, possibly, you know, giveaway things. There's still time to accomplish that, too. Nothing was budgeted, though. So I just need some direction so we can go forward and answer some questions of the fair board.
We're awfully close to the beginning of the opening of the fair right now, aren't we?
The 19th. Yeah. I mean, there's still, based on discussion today, there's still time to get things ordered and get them delivered. Nothing was budgeted, though, and I really don't even know how many to plan for and items like that.
The advertising has already gone into the weekly papers, because I've seen it, and the daily paper. So, so to set a Story County Day, and then not, quite frankly, have it announced anywhere in hopes that it, you know, maybe it would generate some additional traffic, it would generate some additional awareness, we've wasted our opportunity here, I think, for that kind of thing. And I'm sorry, I haven't seen the memo because the link didn't work, and I was on a list of things I had to do to try and remember to call, and then, and so I just tried it again, and it still doesn't work.
Yeah, I just checked it too, and it takes me to, like, a calendar.
I think I would concur that we, let's look at this for next year and start earlier, start several months earlier talking about it, maybe strategically. I hate to see us do something last minute, because I think that may be, you know, not the best use of your time and not the best use of others' time who might have to, you know, get involved at this point. I'm personally comfortable with just taking a bye on it this year.
And really, the direction from the board last year was do something more along the lines for county employees. At the, if I recall from the discussion, at least that was the leaning of one board member. That was, I'm not even sure how we would accomplish that, just at the fair for county employees.
Let's not do something just for the sake of doing something.
Right.
It's definitely okay without a booth.
Now, if you want a supervisor to go to the fair meeting tomorrow night, you know, to apologize for us not, you know, being able to come up with something or a table or whatever.
I know they're doing daily posts on different opportunities that are coming up with their social media. So I don't think they're, I just won't be able to communicate to them so that they have an opportunity to plan ahead.
And, you know, as individuals, once again, the three supervisors have decided to participate in the ribbon auction. And I've run that, checked that money over. Okay.
Thanks for coordinating that.
No problem.
Yeah.
It was. Anyway, so let's see. An email and all the work involved.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, but we've done that as three individuals out of our personal finances to do that, you know, as the board. But there's no money coming from the county. So, yeah, I think let's take a pass this year and then let's put it on a work schedule for the discussion to start maybe in May next year. I remember when we did the booth a couple of years, I wasn't able to participate in them, but we had county employees who signed up, if that's one way to go. If we want to pursue an idea about do something for the employees, we'd have to figure out what that would be. Yeah, so let's look at that next year. Thank you.
After last year, after destroying two tents, with I think a booth option is not necessarily the way to go with the weather.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Leanne.
Thank you.
Now, we'll head on. Upcoming agenda items. Is there anything we need to talk about?
I've got a couple of items. The first one is that after becoming aware that we have not changed our, it looks like, since our schedule of maximum income for general assistance and veterans assistance, et cetera, since 2014. At least I was looking at a schedule that had 2014 at the top. I did talk to Alyssa Wignall about talking to Carla Webb when she came back, okay, about possibly coming before the board for direction and presenting some information to the board about how it is we handle those general assistance and how we set those guidelines. So that's purely in Alyssa and Carla's hands when they get to it. Today, if everybody's fine with that, they could go ahead and do some of the research and asking Carla to do some of that and come to us at some point for discussion later on.
Alyssa, anything you want to add to that?
No, I think it's just a discussion on how it's, I don't know how that level is set.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
So I don't anticipate it coming right away. And then I believe we are set to talk about the urban renewal area grants, small community grants, on the 23rd. And at that point, I would like to have a discussion about where we believe we are financially headed in at the beginning of fiscal year 20. I know Lisa Markley has crunched some new numbers, and I'd like to have kind of that as part of the discussion about where we are, according to my calculations, just on the small community grants themselves, we're about $100,000 more in ask for these urban renewal funds than we have funds to do, and so that seems to be a good time for us to discuss the updated budget calculation.
I heard August 6th being
a date. Is that it?
That's what the calendar has.
Thank you. In that case, then August 6th would be. I see no reason to have it before. I don't know we're getting any other grant requests, at least, you know, but that seems a good time to have it then.
Okay. Yeah, right. They're planning on a presentation the end, and Lisa on August 6th.
Okay. All right. Thank you. No, those are the two items I have for upcoming.
Public forum number two.
No, I didn't have anything else. Nope, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, pardon me. Public forum number two, any public comments? I don't see any members of the public here. This is not a reporter. So hi. We'll skip public forum number two. Liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcements from the supervisors. I have nothing that I need to announce here today.
I don't have anything at this time either.
Okay. Tonight, the Ames Area Metropolitan Planning Organization Policy Committee meets. We're going to be having the public hearing and probably approving the 2020 through 2024 transportation plan for the Ames Area Metropolitan. Thursday morning, HRDA board meets in a special session again, still dealing with the audit and the budget. We did not pass a budget. We were not comfortable on June 30th. It's odd. I've never covered in all my years as a decades as a journalist or as sitting on for a board for 2.5 years to enter into a new fiscal year without an approved budget. I will tell you I have spoken to the assistant auditor, state auditor, who was involved in the fiscal year 18 budget, and the item that received the notation or the statements about omission from the profit and loss statement and postings for that year was a result of it used to be when Heartland was the subcontractor or the contractor. Apparently, we, Surrey County, did the fiscal on it, but that was something that was not used to be required. I just want to say nobody's done anything wrong here. It just wasn't required. I want to give you background. And then HRDA took over the financials for them and redid for all of the counties at that point. And then in 18, the legislature passed. I'm looking at Lisa smiling. Okay, passed a new requirement about listing obligations for post-employment health insurance, and that entry then in the audit is completely related to that post-employment health insurance.
and there is no requirement that the agency have a cash reserve for that. And so that's the big thing that I think we need to worry about. Obviously, the agency will fix that posting situation. And so on the 11th, then we meet, I will bring back an update on the 16th, including I do want to let you know I also emailed my fellow board members and asked if we could on Thursday discuss it, be brought up to date about the discussions other county boards may be having about whether shoring up and some of the services for HRDA to ascertain that current service levels were kept. Okay, and then I have the Ames Economic Development Commission executive meeting on Friday morning. So I will be gone from after our meeting on the 16th, actually after the Story County Housing Trust Fund meeting, and then I will be back for on Monday the 22nd, I think it is, or yeah, 22nd. Okay, that's what I've got.
I guess I could say I'm going to be out of the office Thursday and Friday this week.
Okay. Then I would entertain a motion for us to go into closed session for item number 17, pursuant to code section 21.51A.
Okay, I would move that we go into closed session pursuant to 21.51A, general assistance appeal to review or discuss records which are required or authorized by state or federal law to be kept confidential.
I will second that motion.
Okay, discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. We will go into closed session, and I think we're headed to conference room A for that. Is that right, Ethan?
Yes. And I need to just move by my office to grab that.
Okay. Okay, we are back in open session, and I would entertain a motion on item number 17 on the agenda.
I move that we uphold the decision of community services related to this general assistance appeal, of which records were required by law to be kept confidential.
I would second that motion.
Okay. Is there any discussion? If not, Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. We've upheld the decision. Thank you very much, and I would entertain a motion to adjourn our session.
I make a motion to adjourn session today.
I second that.
Okay, Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Thank you. Yes.
Merkin? Aye.
Yes.
Aye. We are adjourned. Thank you very much.
I like that.
So Aaron and I will draft order and we'll have that submitted to you hopefully this afternoon.